4961. Again, that's 335-4961.
Throughout the week, we bring you health and accessibility programming. Mondays at 10 a.m., keystrokes. Mondays at 5 p.m., the assistive tech update. Mondays at 5:30 p.m., blind abilities. Wednesdays at 10 a.m., the blindness and disability news hour. The AARP report and the diabetic news programs fill out the hours Thursdays at 4 a.m. and 10 a.m., and Sundays at 6 p.m. Recording Library of West Texas Radio. Read by listening.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 71 and clear. Tonight, clear with a low in the mid-50s. Then, tomorrow, clear with a high in the mid-70s. Tomorrow night, clear with a low in the upper 50s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas. It's 1 p.m.
Good afternoon. Welcome to your coronavirus update from the Recording Library of West Texas for Monday, February 7th, 2021. I'm Michael, and coming up in our program today, we'll be reading some of these articles. Despite dip in COVID-19 cases, expert says U.S. is in the eye of the hurricane as variant spread. More contagious variant identified in U.K. is spreading rapidly throughout the U.S., study says. Much more coronavirus genome sequencing is needed to track variants, CDC director says. Booster shots and annual vaccinations likely will be needed to combat variants in Britain. Beware of bogus COVID vaccine offers proliferating on the dark web. Yellen says job market is still in a deep hole with a long way to dig out. Third stimulus check. When could you get a $1,400 check? And healthcare workers detail struggles of PPE scarcity during pandemic. People were getting sick more and more. First, we'll check the numbers. Both of these numbers for Ector and Midland counties are unchanged from Friday. Confirmed cases in Ector County, 7,661. Probable cases, 6,827. Fatalities, 302. Estimated active cases, 1,582. Estimated recovered, 12,604. For Midland County, confirmed cases, 15,687. Fatalities, 220. Estimated active cases, 2,191. Estimated recovered, 13,276. And here are numbers for Texas in a story from the Associated Press that was published Sunday. Texas COVID-19 hospitalizations continue to decline. The number of people hospitalized with COVID-19 in Texas fell again Sunday after dipping below 10,000 for the first time since December on Saturday. There were 9,652 people in Texas hospitals with confirmed cases of the disease caused by the novel coronavirus Sunday, according to the Department of State Health Services. That's the lowest figure recorded since December 16th. State health officials reported 5,278 new confirmed cases of the virus Sunday, 1,499 probable cases, and 167 more fatalities. Texas has reported 38,643 COVID-19 deaths and more than 2.16 million cases since the pandemic began. The actual number of cases is believed to be far higher because many people haven't been tested, and some who get sick don't show symptoms. Over the past week, more than 16% of COVID tests in Texas have come back positive, according to data from Johns Hopkins University. For most people, the coronavirus causes mild or moderate symptoms that clear up within weeks, but for others, especially older adults and people with existing health problems, the virus can cause severe illness and be fatal. And now here are coronavirus briefs for this Monday. More than 462,000 people have died of the coronavirus in the United States, and the total number of reported cases is edging toward 27 million. But the daily numbers continue to decline. South Africa will suspend use of Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine after researchers found it provided minimal protection against infections caused by the new variant first detected in that country. However, there are a couple of articles which say there's no evidence that the Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine is ineffective in preventing severe illness or death, UK junior health minister says. And still some hope AstraZeneca vaccine will perform against South Africa variant, researcher says. Two-thirds of Americans approve of Biden's handling of the pandemic, according to a poll by ABC News Ipsos. There is widespread support for his planned relief bill. Democrats to unveil $3,000 child benefit as part of Biden relief package. Paid family and sick leave could expand for the first time in decades because of the pandemic. Dr. Anthony S. Fauci predicted that vaccine supplies would improve by March with increased doses of approved vaccines from Pfizer-BioNTech and Moderna and a new vaccine candidate from Johnson & Johnson. Throughout Tampa, football fans crammed into bars and clogged up streets, many without masks, despite warnings from public health experts that the Super Bowl could become a super spreader event. Representative Ron Wright, Republican, Texas, has died after a battle with COVID-19. In a statement, Wright's office said the 67-year-old lawmaker, who had also been battling cancer, will be remembered as a constitutional conservative. Delta Airlines to block middle seats on flights through April. And New Orleans closes bars and bans to-go drinks for Mardi Gras weekend. And now here are our articles that we'll read today. Despite dipping COVID-19 cases, experts says U.S. is in the eye of the hurricane as variants spread, from CNN's Christina Maxoris. While a recent dip in COVID-19 infections may seem encouraging, experts warn now is not the time for Americans to let their guard down. That's largely because of new variants circulating in the U.S., putting the country once again in the eye of the hurricane, according to one expert. I've been on Zoom calls for the last 2 weeks about how we're going to manage this, Dr. Peter Hotez, Dean of the National School of Tropical Medicine at Baylor College of Medicine, told CNN Sunday. The big wall is about to hit us again, and these are the new variants. Nearly 700 cases of COVID-19 variants, first spotted in the UK, South Africa, and Brazil, have been reported in the U.S. so far, according to data updated by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The vast majority of those cases are the B.1.1.7 strain, which was first detected in the UK and has now been spotted in at least 33 states. Experts say the highly contagious variant will likely soon become dominant in the U.S., and a new study found significant community transmission may already be occurring. This could be really very dire for our country as we head into the spring, Hotez said of the variants. Now we're in a race. We're in a race to see how quickly we can vaccinate the American people. Vaccination drive. More than 31 million Americans have so far received at least their first dose of either the Pfizer or Moderna vaccine, according to CDC data, as officials work to ramp up vaccinations across the country. More than 9 million people have so far received both doses of a vaccine, according to the data. And a third vaccine could be on its way to the U.S. market soon. Johnson & Johnson asked the Food and Drug Administration for an emergency use authorization of its vaccine last week. More contagious variant identified in UK is spreading rapidly throughout the U.S., study says. From CNN's Amy Gumbrick. A new study finds that cases of a more contagious coronavirus variant are rapidly increasing in the United States, and significant community transmission may already be occurring. Although the B.1.1.7 variant, first identified in the UK, is currently at a relatively low frequency in the U.S., the paper says it's doubling every week and a half, similar to what was observed in other countries. The report estimates this variant is 35 to 45% more transmissible than strains that appeared earlier in the U.S. and is doubling about every 10 days in the country. Last month, the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention modeling predicted the B.1.1.7 variant could become the predominant strain in the United States by March. It estimates the virus is about 50% more transmissible. Our study shows that the U.S. is on a similar trajectory as other countries, where B.1.1.7 rapidly became the dominant SARS-CoV-2 variant, requiring immediate and decisive action to minimize COVID-19 morbidity and mortality, researchers wrote in the study's preprint, which has not yet been peer-reviewed or published. In addition to groups of cases in California, Florida, and Georgia, many B.1.1.7 cases in the U.S. did not report recent international travel, the report said, suggesting significant community transmission of the B.1.1.7 variant is already ongoing across the U.S. Much more coronavirus genome sequencing is needed to track variants, CDC director says, from CNN's Jacqueline Howard and Nick Neville. The U.S. has ramped up its genome sequencing efforts to hunt for coronavirus variants, U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention Director Dr. Rochelle Walensky said on Monday. But even more sequencing is needed. Over the last 3 weeks or so, we've increased our sequencing about tenfold, Walensky said during a White House briefing on Monday. So as we look more, we certainly anticipate we might find more, Walensky said, adding that the CDC is collaborating with state labs, commercial labs, and academic labs to make sure sampling from every state is included in the agency's sequencing efforts. Scientists search for coronavirus mutations by taking samples of the virus from patients' nasal swabs and analyzing their genetic sequences. Mutations are changes in the genetic code of a virus that naturally occur over time when an animal or person is infected, and such mutations can lead to an emergence of new variants. We anticipate that we're probably going to be sequencing up to 3 to 4 more than we're already sequencing, Walensky said. I think once we have more sequencing that's happening, we'll have a better idea as to how many variants there are and what proportion are out there. Walensky said during the briefing that she was reluctant to provide an estimate of how many coronavirus variant cases there could be based on the current data. Booster shots and annual vaccinations likely to be needed to combat variants in Britain, by the Washington Post's Aaron Cunningham. Britain is likely to deploy booster shots for coronavirus vaccines in the fall, and annual vaccinations after that, as scientists and public health officials race against the spread of new, more contagious variants of the virus, two government ministers said. In an interview with Sky News Monday, the junior health minister, Edward Argar, said that like the flu vaccine, coronavirus injections may need to be tweaked and updated every year to deal with new mutations and variants. This is a much more severe virus that has killed a lot more people than, for example, seasonal flu, Argar said of the coronavirus. Every year with the flu vaccine, researchers update it. They look at new variants. They look at new mutations, and they tweak and update that vaccine to make sure it's effective against those new variants. It would not be unreasonable to suggest something similar here, so it continues to keep pace with the virus that will always try to outwit us, he said, adding that government-supported researchers were already working on identifying new variants and updating the vaccines. His comments follow similar remarks made by vaccines minister Nadhim Zawahiri on the BBC on Sunday. He said that he believed that a third vaccine dose would need to be made available in Britain in the fall to boost immunity against virus variants, followed by annual vaccinations. British authorities are battling multiple variants, including one first identified in southern England and another that was first discovered in South Africa. Both are highly contagious, and the latter has been shown to reduce the effectiveness of vaccines developed to combat the original strain. According to the Times of London, a crucial decision looms about which strain to target after researchers found that the Oxford-AstraZeneca vaccine provided minimal protection against mild to moderate coronavirus infections caused by the variant first detected in South Africa. Just under 150 cases of the variant have been identified in Britain, and a surge testing program has been launched to try to contain it. If the testing program fails, however, then booster shots targeting the variant will be deployed in the fall. And now we have a few articles from CBS News. Beware bogus COVID-19 vaccine offers proliferating on the dark web. For months, the internet has been filled with offers of PPE that turns out to be counterfeit and COVID tests that are actually phony, as well as ads for under-the-table miracle virus cures. Now, reports CBS Chicago, dark web digital sellers are moving into a new territory, marketing COVID-19 vaccines, capitalizing on fear and scarcity across the globe. The dark web is meant to connect unidentified buyers with anonymous sellers. With millions of people hoping to get a precious COVID-19 vaccine, there's something new lurking in this often seedy place. It's very, very specific type of vaccine, and it's something ahead of time. Skipping the line and getting out to the front is a big draw. Mark Ostrowski, head of engineering for the cybersecurity company Checkpoint, told CBS Chicago. His team has found that just in the last 6 weeks, the number of vaccine ads on the dark web has exploded. The asking prices have doubled or even quadrupled. Search results tease potential buyers with language like available now and going fast. One offer, $300 for 14 doses, looks like a steal, $200 below the $500 original price. This seller even offered a 100% refund if the vaccine failed to arrive. Or there's another seller who offered to ship to the United Kingdom, the United States, and Spain. The best method of correspondence? Encrypted messaging services like WhatsApp or Telegram. That's where the Checkpoint team started messaging these sellers to try to learn more. They found another offer, a bulk discount, 10,000 bottles of the COVID vaccine for $30,000. One dark web seller even messaged a picture of a sample bottle of vaccine with a December expiration date. Another wanted $1,500 for four doses of a Chinese vaccine. The Checkpoint team even sent a seller the Bitcoin payment to see what they would get in return. Our expectations were low, and of course, they weren't met, said Ostrowski. A few days after the Bitcoin transaction, Checkpoint received a message from the vendor saying the vaccine had been shipped. Then a few days later, that vendor's account completely disappeared from the site. And then, you guessed it, Checkpoint never got anything in the mail. And it's not just vaccine that's being peddled. The Checkpoint team also found ads for the malaria medication hydroxychloroquine, once falsely touted by former President Trump to treat COVID-19. All clinical trials conducted during 2020 found hydroxychloroquine was ineffective against COVID. As far as Ostrowski can tell, none of these sellers really has any of the COVID-19 vaccines. But as time goes by and more people get access to legitimate doses, there's always the possibility that some of that real product could make its way onto the dark web. So that's how these things typically work, where goods are being offered, money is transferred, and then poof, these go away, said Ostrowski. That's what really makes it dangerous, because you really don't know what you're getting. So you're putting not only yourself at risk if something like this happens, but you're getting multiple doses and trying to resell it. The risk is so huge. Back in December, Interpol saw this coming. It issued a global alert to law enforcement across 194 countries, warning them about organized crime networks targeting COVID-19 vaccines, both physically and online. Also from CBS News, Yellen says job market still in a deep hole with a long way to dig out, by Melissa Quinn, Washington. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen warned Sunday that the job market is stalling and there is a long way to dig out as the nation continues to grapple with the economic fallout from the ongoing coronavirus crisis. I'm afraid that the job market is stalling, she said in an interview with Face the Nation. We saw that in Friday's unemployment report, just 6,000 private sector jobs were created, 49,000 overall. And that's after a month in which we actually saw job loss. We have 10 million people unemployed, 4 million have dropped out of the labor market, and another 2 million are working part-time who really would like full-time work. We're in a deep hole with respect to the job market and a long way to dig out. The coronavirus crisis has wreaked havoc on the U.S. economy, leaving millions out of work as businesses were forced to shutter or scale down their operations in response to state and local directives designed to mitigate the spread of COVID-19. The nation's unemployment rate fell to 6.3% from 6.7% in December, according to a Bureau of Labor Statistics report released Friday. To address the economic impact of the coronavirus crisis, President Biden has put forth a $1.9 trillion aid package that, if approved by Congress, would provide $1,400 direct payments to those under a certain income level, boost assistance for the unemployed, and provide more funding for small businesses, among other issues. Last week, the House and Senate each took the first step in a legislative process that would allow the Democratic-controlled Congress to pass Mr. Biden's plan without Republican support, with Vice President Kamala Harris casting the tie-breaking vote. While the president has vowed to provide $1,400 stimulus checks to Americans, some Democrats have called for monthly survival checks of $2,000 to households affected by the pandemic. Debate also continues as to whether the $1,400 checks should be more targeted to lower-income households, and Mr. Biden has said he's open to narrowing who receives the checks to ensure they go to those most in need of help. Yellen said the direct payments shouldn't go to very well-off families that don't need the money and haven't been hit hard by the coronavirus crisis, but noted for a police officer or elementary school teacher making $60,000 or $65,000 per year, it's appropriate they could use the assistance to address financial burdens. It has to go to people in households that do need the money, and those are lower-income households, she said. We need to make sure that the cutoffs are appropriate so that households that are doing really well, that maybe have seen their stock portfolios rise and make a lot of income and haven't lost their jobs, those households shouldn't be getting it. Yellen added that Mr. Biden's relief plan will do a huge amount to create jobs. The spending it will create is going to lead to demand for workers, help put people back to work, especially when we can get vaccinations and the public health situation to the point where the economy can begin to open up again, she said. Yellen also said the $350 billion in direct aid to state and local governments included in the Democratic proposal will ensure public sector workers can keep their jobs. We've already seen 1.3 million workers fired off state and local payrolls because of shortfalls that they have in revenues, and they have mandates to balance their budgets. And this plan provides funds for the state and local governments to be able to re-employ and hang on to their first responders, policemen, firemen, and other essential workers, she said. Yellen pledged that once Congress approves a coronavirus relief package, there will be more legislation to help the economy rebound. There will be another bill that addresses job creation through infrastructure development, through investment in people and education and training, addresses climate change, improves the competitiveness of our economy, and is designed to create good jobs with good pay, she said. And this also from CBS News, third stimulus check. When could you get a $1,400 check? By Amy Peachy. President Joe Biden's $1.9 trillion coronavirus relief plan proposes a third round of stimulus checks of $1,400 for most Americans. Yet, while that could extend a helping hand to millions of households still suffering from the pandemic's economic fallout, it could be weeks until the payments arrive, analysts say. The price tag for the relief package, called the American Rescue Plan, faces pushback from some Republican lawmakers who last year resisted Democratic efforts to pass a $2 trillion bill. Heights securities analyst Hunter Hammond expects a final package could be passed in the first quarter and range from $1.5 to $2.2 trillion. On February 1st, a group of 10 Republican lawmakers unveiled an alternative stimulus plan that would scale back the checks to $1,000 per adult and lower the income cap for receiving payment. That plan would cut the cost of a third stimulus check to $220 billion, compared with $600 billion under Mr. Biden's more generous package. But Democrats aren't waiting for Republican support. The Senate early passed a budget resolution, a key step for the Democratic-controlled Congress to move forward with Mr. Biden's $1.9 trillion relief proposal without any Republican votes. Among the amendments approved was a bipartisan plan introduced by Democratic Senator Joe Manchin and Republican Senator Susan Collins to block upper-income citizens from the next round of stimulus checks. The amendment doesn't define upper income. Congress is pushing forward on a Democrat-only $1.9 trillion stimulus package in an attempt to strike while the iron is hot, and we expect this effort to succeed, noted Hunter Hammond, an analyst with Heights Securities, in a February 5th research note. Mr. Biden has expressed a willingness to negotiate, with the president saying he would insist on $1,400 checks, but suggesting he was open to targeting the checks to people who need the most help. Depending on how the talks play out, that could result in fewer Americans getting a check. The Washington Post reported that Democrats may lower the income threshold to qualify for a payment to single people who earn $50,000 or less and married couples with incomes of $100,000 or less. In two previous rounds of checks, the income caps to get a check were $75,000 for single earners and $150,000 for married couples, with the payments reduced for incomes above those thresholds until the payments phased out entirely at higher incomes. The Democrats' parliamentary maneuver, called budget reconciliation, requires only a majority vote for legislation to become law, though it can delay passage. Many Democrats are arguing for a large stimulus package, pointing to renewed economic distress in recent months as the pandemic worsens. The January jobs report indicated subdued hiring, with employers adding a modest 49,000 jobs. White-collar services leading the gains as lower-paid service jobs continue to suffer. It may look good, but it ain't, wrote Oxford economics economist Lydia Bossier in a February 5th research note. The labor market recovery remained stuck in a rut in January, and the pandemic's winter surge weighed on hiring. The labor market isn't likely to return to pre-pandemic levels until 2024, according to a February 1st report from the Congressional Budget Office. The U.S. economy shrank 3.5% last year, its largest annual decline in 74 years, government data shows. Last year was the worst year for the U.S. economy since World War II. That alone should send a very powerful message to senators who are getting ready to debate COVID legislation and caution them against going small. Senator Ron Wyden, a Democrat from Oregon, said in a January 28th conference call with reporters. Wyden said he would like to see the next relief bill passed at least a week prior to the March 14th expiration of expanded unemployment benefits, which include an extra $300 in weekly jobless aid. I'm not going to let jobless workers fall off a cliff again, Wyden said, referring to the expiration of additional jobless aid from two prior relief packages. Meanwhile, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer of New York said he too is aiming to pass the next round of stimulus aid by mid-March, according to Bloomberg News. And there is more to that story. However, we've run out of time. We may go back and finish that story tomorrow. But for now, that wraps up the coronavirus update for Monday, February 8th, 2021, from the Recording Library of West Texas. I'm Michael. Coming up next, we have Health Magazine. At 2 o'clock, national news from USA Today. At 3 o'clock, the local newspapers. Here are some of the articles that our volunteers have been reading. From the Midland Reporter Telegram, transportation. Motran says population and production give region leverage. Coronavirus. UT report states Midland COVID hospitalizations to continue declining. And education. Ramsey era in Midland begins. MISD board approves superintendent's contract. From the Odessa American, Landgraf tapped as chairman, Odessa representative assigned to committees important to West Texas. New Tech Odessa school makes pitch virtually. New face on the court, Stringer starts service with resolve. Recently sworn in commissioner promises budgetary restraint and trash cleanup. And Heart Health Month. Those articles and more coming up at 3, and then at 6, more national news this evening with the Wall Street Journal. Thank you very much for joining us today. We'll be back tomorrow afternoon at 1. Be well and have a great day.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 72 and clear. Tonight, clear with a low in the mid-50s. Then, tomorrow, clear with a high in the mid-70s. Tomorrow night, clear with a low in the low 50s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas.
This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by GARS, the Georgia Radio Reading Service. Hello, I'm Allison Ramsey, and this is Health Magazine. Today, I'll begin reading from health.com. The first story is, why do you have to wear a mask even after getting the COVID vaccine? Here's what experts say. Don't toss your mask in the stash yet, by Claire Gillespie, posted on January 21st, 2021. An effective vaccine is the first big step toward ending the coronavirus pandemic, and that's exactly what's being rolled out across the U.S. right now. But our days of wearing face masks aren't over yet. While both Pfizer and Moderna vaccines are more than 90% effective at preventing symptomatic COVID-19, we still don't know whether they prevent you from spreading the virus to other people. That's why experts strongly advise that everyone mask up, and that includes anyone who has received the vaccine. Both Pfizer and Moderna trials tracked only how many vaccinated people became sick with COVID-19, meaning it's completely possible that some vaccinated people could subsequently get infected but not develop any symptoms. Those people could then transmit the virus without being aware of it, and the biggest risk is that they spread it to others who haven't been vaccinated yet. Anne Remoyne, PhD, MPH, professor of epidemiology at UCLA Fielding School of Public Health, tells Health. It will take time to widely distribute the vaccine and achieve herd immunity, and that's not guaranteed. So non-pharmaceutical interventions like mask wearing and social distancing will continue to be crucial to stopping the spread, explains Remoyne. If many Americans continue to be hesitant about getting the vaccine, there could be a lot of susceptible people, she adds. Remember, some people aren't able to get vaccinated, such as those with severe allergic reactions to vaccine ingredients. And some pregnant or breastfeeding women may choose not to receive the vaccine until more information is available about the safety of the vaccines in those groups. Continuing to wear a face mask is also important because of the new COVID variants that have been identified. Because they're thought to be more infectious, they can spread more easily to people if vaccinated people are able to transmit the virus and don't wear a mask, Remoyne warns. There's another reason to keep masking up even after you've been vaccinated. In our modern society, we don't discriminate by immune status, and the ethics of doing so would be a very slippery slope. Michal Tal, PhD, an immunologist at Stanford University, tells Health. It's already hard to get everyone to follow current masking regulations, and now if you have some people who are vaccinated and likely but not certainly immune from developing COVID-19 symptoms, not needing to adhere to those same regulations, it will wreak additional havoc on what has already been an extremely chaotic pandemic response. The advice from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, is clear. According to the group's guidelines, not enough information is currently available to say if or when CDC will stop recommending that people wear masks and avoid close contact with others to help prevent the spread of the virus that causes COVID-19. Per the CDC guidelines, we need to keep social distancing by staying 6 feet away from other people, too. The CDC also recommends avoiding crowds and poorly ventilated spaces, and washing your hands often, even after you've had your COVID-19 shot. So will we ever be able to ditch our masks? Hopefully, yes. Although they might remain a significant part of life for some time. I think that we have to continue to wear masks until everyone has had a chance to get vaccinated and we have gotten the virus under control, Tal says. When community transmission is low and the majority of people are vaccinated, I think we'll safely be able to put our masks away. However, nobody knows for sure what role masks will play in our future. I've often wondered if one day we will move houses and discover an old box of masks from these days and dust it off, not having thought about it in years, or if we will start to utilize masks more and more to control the spread of other respiratory infections, such as on an especially bad flu year, Tal says. I suspect that moving forward, doctors and nurses may incorporate masks as a standard part of personal protective equipment for their interactions with patients. Much as glove wearing became standard during the AIDS epidemic and then became standard protective gear, she adds. I think that the vast majority of us, however, can look forward to mask-free days as soon as everyone has had a chance to get vaccinated and viral spread in the community is low. The information in the story is accurate as of press time. However, as the situation surrounding COVID-19 continues to evolve, it's possible that some data have changed since publication. While Health is trying to keep our stories as up-to-date as possible, we also encourage readers to stay informed on news and recommendations for their own communities by using the CDC, WHO, and their local public health departments as resources. That story was, Why Do You Have to Wear a Mask Even After Getting the COVID Vaccine? Here's What Experts Say by Claire Gillespie, posted on January 21st, 2021 on health.com. Switching to the January-February 2021 issue of Health Magazine, I'll read, How Low Can You Go? Want to make one big change toward better living? Consider going zero waste. It's no longer a movement just for extreme bloggers and eco-warriors, and you don't have to be perfect to make the effort worthwhile. By Laura Wallace. It's fair to say 2020 wasn't the greenest year. The pandemic meant that even some of the most eco-conscious among us went disinfectant, wipe, and disposable mask crazy for a while. We cast aside the reusable grocery bags and went back to paper and plastic. We stashed hand sanitizer everywhere and stockpiled enough paper towels to sop up a swimming pool. Although we're still navigating COVID-19, 2021 may be a good time to look ahead and think about protecting the future of the planet. Here's how to approach a zero waste, or at least a much less waste, lifestyle. What does zero waste mean? Imagine if your home operated like nature does, where everything you buy or create could be reused, recycled, or returned to its original source. No landfill required. Author and green lifestyle pro Bee Johnson popularized the movement with her blog and then her book, Zero Waste Home, in 2013. But she started in 2006 when her family downsized from a large house to a small apartment in search of a simpler, less car-dependent life. We only moved in with the necessities, Johnson recalls. After a year, we got our stuff out of storage and found that we never even missed 80% of it. This led to a closer look at what they had been wasting. Johnson came up with the five R's that zero wasters live by: refuse, reduce, reuse, recycle, and rot. The order is important because the most impactful thing that comes first, don't accept that plastic fork or that mailer to begin with. As for what you do bring home, the other R's are the answer to then what. Since Johnson got started, an entire industry has evolved, with bloggers, authors, bulk store owners, and more extolling the virtues of living waste-free. Some do it for reasons of health, others for budget. But whatever your why, experts want you to know that you don't have to eliminate all your trash to make a serious difference. Just get started. Is zero waste anti-women? Some critics decry zero waste as just adding to the second shift of labor for women, since it rejects many of the convenience products that helped liberate us from the house. Thanks in part to some overzealous bloggers, the movement has developed a reputation for being about baking bread, mixing up toothpaste, and beating clothes against stones all day. That scares the crap out of full-time working parents, Johnson says. I was doing everything homemade when I started, and it's unsustainable. She still bakes her own bread because she likes to, but gradually she discovered she could save both money and time by buying things she needed, unpackaged whenever possible, and crucially, just living with less stuff. When you let it simplify your life rather than complicate it, zero waste can be automatic, Johnson says. Before you shop, do a trash audit. Take a serious look at what you're throwing away and tackle the biggest stuff first. For us, it was mostly paper towels and paper napkins, says Deanna Taylor Heacock, owner of the Good Bottle Refill Shop in Maplewood, New Jersey, in recalling her pre-zero waste life. I'd buy huge things of them to get through the month. For others, it's food scraps or product packaging. Make a one-in, one-out rule. I do this for beauty products, says Catherine Kellogg, founder of GoingZeroWaste.com. It's easy to accumulate so many just to try them. Use them up fully before buying more. Know where you can buy unpackaged. As much as 15% of an item's cost is the packaging, Johnson says. So you're throwing money away. Find local or online shops for home goods and bulk foods, as well as butcher shops, farmers markets, CSAs, and bakeries that will let you bring your own containers or return theirs for reuse. Limit your outings. Resolve not to run to the store just for one thing. It invariably leads to unneeded purchases. For household and personal essentials, from laundry detergent to hair conditioner, Taylor Heacock suggests keeping a list of needed supplies, then going to fill your containers just once a month. Be strict with yourself. Prepare for shopping days. Have your gear ready. Keep all your reusable shopping supplies in a tote to grab and go. It will likely take a few weeks to create a system that's manageable for you and make it a habit. People picture me going to the store with a million glass containers, Johnson says. But that's not practical. We just bring 4 to 5 jars for anything wet, and everything else is lightweight cloth bags for things like grains, bread, flour, sugar, and cookies. Once you get home, empty and wash your bags and containers and toss them right back in your totes so you never go to the store without them. Focus only on food when grocery shopping. Tackle things like household cleaner, laundry detergent, and other supplies during the separate once-a-month shopping trip. This also helps limit what you have to lug home from the supermarket. Shop the periphery of the grocery store. This is where you'll find whole, unpackaged food, Johnson notes, the fresh produce, the meat and fish counters, and the bulk bins. look for better choices. Choose sugar in a paper bag rather than plastic. Buy corn in its husk rather than pre-shucked and plastic wrapped. Find it used. For durable goods, clothing, sporting gear, dishes, furniture, think secondhand. Check out thrift stores, neighborhood swap groups, Facebook Marketplace, and other online resale sites where items are constantly on offer. And don't overlook what your family members might have that they aren't using. My grandma had so much stuff to give me, including a beautiful collection of handkerchiefs, says Kellogg. Buy new only if none of those turn up what you need. Where to shop? A few websites have done their legwork for you. Check out app.zerowastehome.com. Helps you find places selling in bulk, listings in more than 100 countries. Litterless.com, bulk shopping options in stores and online, and compost locations by state. ZeroWasteNerd.com, find sellers of bulk goods and zero-waste lifestyle products around the world. Food prep and eating. Compost, the rot's part of the five R's. On average, 50% of what a home throws away is organic matter that can be composted, Kellogg says, including food scraps, yard trimmings, and many paper products. You can invest in a backyard compost tumbler, look for a smaller bin made for indoor use, or find a service that will collect the scraps. All of these turn waste into something nourishing for the soil. Be smart when eating out. Bring containers for leftovers instead of accepting doggy bags. Don't have a silicone or metal straw with you? Skip the straw. Bring your own to-go cup for coffee, or sit down with a real mug. Store food like your grandmother did. Use glass instead of plastic in the fridge and pantry. Try cloth bags to keep bread fresh. Drink tap water. Use a filter if your local water doesn't taste good, like bubbles. Save money with a sparkling water maker such as SodaStream. What's in the jar? Bea Johnson famously reduced her household trash to what can fit in one jar for the year, a feat that has become a litmus test for zero wasters everywhere. It turns out even when the five R's are implemented to the fullest, some bits of trash are unavoidable. They're different for everyone, but for Johnson, they include things like the backing from stamps, stickers on the occasional fruit or tomato bought at corner store, contact lenses plus the seal on the top of the contact lens solution bottle, bristles pried from bamboo toothbrushes, labels on electrical appliance cords, small strips of silicone when the sink needs recaulking. Around the house. Simplify cleaning supplies. You can mix up basic ones. Johnson cleans just about everything with vinegar, water, and Castile soap, or just source versatile products from a refill shop. I'll do a blog post on an all-purpose cleaner and people will respond to say, you know you can make your own. And I say, let me stop you right there, says Taylor Heacock. I'm not making this stuff. I have to get dinner on the table. Upgrade the bathroom. A lot of the world uses bidets, and a toilet attachment is an inexpensive addition. It's clean and efficient, and you can use washable cloth for drying instead of wasteful paper. Bonus. When no one could find toilet paper last March, I wasn't worried, says Kellogg. Replace disposables with reusables. Cloth napkins instead of paper. Broom and mop instead of disposable dusting cloths. You don't have to shell out for specific zero-waste products unless you want to. I like certain products like unpaper towels because they serve a great purpose and look good, Taylor Heacock says. If it helps you make the transition, go for it. Set yourself up for success. To get new habits to stick, Keep reusable cloth or napkins wherever you'd normally keep the paper versions. Use them until they need laundering. Then toss in a bag or hamper close by and wash with your regular towel load. Rehome what you don't need. Give away usable items on the FreeCycle Network, freecycle.org, or local message boards. Drop off old linens and towels at the animal shelter. Libraries often collect books for sale. Swap outgrown kids' clothes with other parents. That story was How Low Can You Go? By Laura Wallace. The next story is Kitty Corner. Want to get the new year off to a fun start? Add an adorable fur baby to the family. Here's everything you need to know about bringing home a kitten, or two, by Hannah Harper. Prep your environment. Before welcoming your kitten home, or better yet, two kittens, so they'll always have company and a built-in playmate, you'll need to buy the essentials. See our checklist. And work on baby-proofing your space. Think of kittens like human toddlers. They will get into everything, says Erin Mays, an assistant director of feline behavior at Paws Chicago. Cover wires and cords. Remove small or breakable objects from tables and shelves. Block off potential hiding places. And get rid of any plants toxic to cats. Lilies, for example, can be deadly to kittens when ingested. Once everything is squared away, set up a small, quiet room with your cat's bed, food, and litter box. This will be their safe room until they can become acclimated to the rest of the house. There are some things you'll want to bring home from the shelter or breeder, including a blanket or toy for a familiar scent and a few weeks' worth of food. A sudden change in foods can cause stomach upset in kittens, so you will want to continue with the same food for at least a few weeks to reduce stress, says Kyoko Yoshida, DVM, co-founder of the Hudson Animal Hospital in New York City. Then you can transition their diet slowly, doing a mix of their old food and new food for several days. Another way to preemptively decrease anxiety in your kitten is to use a plug-in pheromone spray. Undetectable to humans, the spray will release cat mom pheromones into the space, calming your feline, says Dr. Yoshida. Dr. Yoshida recommends signing up for pet insurance while your kitten is young and healthy. It may come in handy later down the line. How to handle furry siblings. If you already have a resident dog or cat, they will probably notice the presence of your new kitten right away. While both animals should become familiar with each other's scent, face-to-face interactions are best avoided at first. Let your cat or dog sniff out the new creature under the door. You can even swap their bedding for a night or two. Then, slowly introduce them with a barrier in place, and your dog on leash, to see how they react. Some hissing or growling at first is to be expected, but that's also a sign not to move forward quite yet, says Mays. Once both animals appear calm, introduce them without a barrier. Reinforce every positive interaction with a food reward on both ends. The process may be slow going depending on the animals, but timid introductions and frequent rewards should ease the tension, says Mays. Build a bond. Your cat may not be super cuddly right away, but getting her used to your touch sooner rather than later will make her more comfortable and will make trimming nails, brushing, and giving medications easier later on. If you have a very fearful kitten, just sit in the safe room with them, bring food, and as they eat, lightly pet their head and neck area. Before the cat finishes eating, stop petting, says Mays. This will help create a positive association around you. Also work to engage your kitten in play as much as possible. Toys like laser pointers, plush mice, and scratching posts will keep her active and happy. Specifically with scratching, avoid negative reinforcement like yelling, as it can make kittens more anxious. Scratching is a natural and healthy behavior and simply needs to be redirected to an appropriate alternative, says Mays. If your cat is clawing at the sofa, get her a vertical carpet-covered post. If she's ripping up the rug, try for a flat hemp board. You'll start to see the behavior you want and keep a strong relationship with your new kitten. Never declaw a cat. A big misconception is that the nail is just being removed, but that's not the case. If you can imagine a cat's paw as your hand, the declaw procedure is amputating at the knuckle closest to your fingertip, says Mays. Removing a cat's primary defense can also cause her to rely more heavily on biting and lead to litter box avoidance, as digging may cause her pain. The first vet visit. Depending on your agreement with the adoption center and your kitten's vaccine schedule, the first vet appointment could occur anytime from a few days to almost 1 month after bringing your new pet home. Kittens usually receive 3 to 4 rounds of vaccines, administered 2 to 4 weeks apart. It's important to get their vaccination records from the adoption center so you could stay in sync with their schedule. You'll also want to ask about microchips. Most cats these days coming from breeders or rescue places will already have microchips installed, says Dr. Yoshida. In that case, the only step is to update your pet's microchip registry with your contact information in case the cat gets lost. Other than that, you can expect a general health checkup during the first appointment. We do head-to-tail full exams, making sure baby teeth are coming in well, the heart doesn't have a murmur, and joints and bones are developing well, says Dr. Yoshida. Kitten checklist. Water and food bowls. Kitten food and treats. Bed or fleece blanket. Litter box, litter and scoop. Toys, scratchers and catnip. Cat's carrier. Grooming supplies. Flea and tick control. Stain and odor remover products. That story was Kitty Corner by Hannah Harper. The next stories come from the section The Share. The Healthy Buzz. Do you add a squeeze of honey to your tea when you're feeling under the weather? Turns out there may be some science behind your go-to home remedy. Researchers from Oxford University recently published a review of studies related to the efficacy of honey in reducing symptoms of upper respiratory infections. The review found honey to be effective in reducing cough frequency and severity, and suggested it may be preferable to over-the-counter medications in treating coughs and colds. Honey has also been shown to reduce oxidative stress in the body, help maintain clear arteries, support healthy gut bacteria, and provide essential minerals like phosphorus, calcium, potassium, and magnesium. Buy honey from your farmer's market for local flavor. Drink up. If getting more H2O is on your list of resolutions, here's help. This water bottle is part of the Made For method, co-founded by Blake Mikulski, the founder of Tom's, and former Navy SEAL Patrick Dossett. Mikulski started the wellness company with his longtime friend after finding major success, then experiencing burnout and mild depression. The program uses science-backed advice to help you form healthy habits in a delightfully analog way. No apps needed. There are 10 kits in all, each with a focus of its own, including connection, gratitude, and clarity. Made For Introduction Kit. Hydration, $48. 10-month subscription, $95 each month. Scholarships available. GetMadeFor.com. Those stories came from the section The Share, from the January-February 2021 issue of Health Magazine. That concludes today's readings of Health Magazine. This has been Allison Ramsey for the Georgia Radio Reading Service. Thank you for listening to GARS.
Next on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, USA Today. Followed by the Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American at 3.
This is a recording library of West Texas Community Update.
MCH creates phone line for health screening. Medical Center Health System is creating a phone line for patients to call for health screenings when presenting signs for COVID-19. Patients who are experiencing